Blog Talk Radio.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
Oh, the humanity. Oh.
Mary had a little lamb in sleep and white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool. Ah! Ah!
Ah! I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
And we're back after a long, long weekend. It seemed to be like forever. It's Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. The number's 347-308-8701. As many of you know, yesterday I did a show on Max 94.1 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. They had some technical difficulties there, but you know we'll get into that later. I'll wait until the end of the show and talk about what the response was out in Baton Rouge. And you can pretty much expect, no, the Negroes were not happy. No, they were not. I spoke to the host of that show. His name is Silky Slim on the air. Arthur Reed is his given name. And, you know, he and I have been exchanging text and talking about what some of the response was out there, and the Negroes hated it. Of course, it is the beginning of the week. It is Monday, April the 16th, 2012. Welcome to your week. As you all know, Monday's usually a slow news day because nothing really happens over the weekend except for the prostitute scandal. That's right. Another black eye for the Obama administration. And I know a lot of people are trying not to say, well, it really doesn't reflect on Obama. Well, yes, it does. Because this would... It would reflect bad on George W. Bush if it had happened on his watch. Of course it would. Because it would then describe what the atmosphere was like in the White House and within his administration. A very lackadaisical approach to governing or national security. So, you know, the same way that George W. Bush was blamed for Hurricane Katrina, some of these morons went so far as to say that they thought George W. Bush steered the damn thing towards Louisiana. Yes, they did. That's right. Let me go so far as to say some people I worked with in the radio business have suggested such a thing. That's right. Went and said that the American government had a weather machine. Had plotted, amongst conspiracy theorists, that is, had plotted to take out Louisiana to make it a non-chocolate city. As Mayor Ray Nagin suggested that New Orleans would always be. This will always be a chocolate city. Ray Nagin! That's what he said. JC, I'm sure you want to chime in there. Go ahead, real quick.
If George Bush had the weather machine, wouldn't he have had to have passed it on to Obama?
Pretty much.
Or maybe he got his own made by Cadillac.
Yeah, then he destroyed it.
And what is he planning on doing on the Midwest? Putting projects?
Yes, exactly.
125 tornadoes?
Actually, it's up to 130.
He was busy on the button yesterday, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. If we were to follow the same narrative, they would be like, Barack Obama's trying to get rid of all whiteys so that he could totally win the black vote and not have any whiteys voting against him. I can use that same narrative. But Let's get back into the prostitute scandal. Now, I need to break this down to you. Other than the obvious, they went to Cartagena, Colombia, 11 Secret Service members, as many as 5 military officers were involved in a prostitution drinking scandal. One prostitute didn't get paid $47. 47. She didn't get paid $47 and she went ape. Banging on doors, screaming bloody murder. Ah, me want my $47. 47. God, 47. She had to get her $47. 47.
$47 could have fed her and her whole family for
I'm sure. 47! 47!
Okay. Well, is there a difference in the money here and there? Because here, he could have gotten service for 20.
Mm-hmm.
And what did he get done? Yeah. What was the tax? $7?
No. Here's where the irony is in it. You know this picture of Hillary Clinton that has been gone viral with her dancing and drinking at this bar
dropping
in Columbia?
Like hot. Dropping yeah. like it's hot, yeah.
Hillary out there dropping it. Here's the interesting part, right? Here's a Secret Service guy who wouldn't pay a prostitute $47. It was reported earlier today that Hillary Clinton left a $40 bar tip at the bar she was at, drinking beer. So even Hillary Ooh. Clinton could drop $40. This guy had $7, the senior of that tab, and he's got this poor girl, 47! 47!
Or that could be her playing her player's card.
Yeah, exactly.
Letting them know she got $47 ready to go.
yeah, right, exactly. Let me put a little spin on this. Now, listen, this is typical of the administration as of late. What we've seen as of late coming out of this administration, as well as others, when Democrats are in office. And I want to take this back to the Clinton era. You see, sex nowadays is treated so nonchalant. It's passé. You know, Bill Clinton in his 50s at the time takes a 19-year-old intern. He's got her in the Oval Office. He's inserting cigars inside of her private areas and smoking them.
Ew.
He's got her performing acts on him while he's on the phone with foreign dignitaries. And everyone has argued, what's the big deal? It's nothing. And then you got, during the Obama administration in 2009, during the White House Correspondents' Dinner, comedian David Cross is invited by Amber Tamblyn. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. He emails all of his friends a picture of himself snorting cocaine just feet away from Barack Obama. You see my point? That the culture and the respect of the White House and this office has been so destroyed. The decline of this office has been allowed. So there are plenty of people who are just brushing this off. Look at it, because there's a Democratic.
Do you really think it's a decline, though, or do you think that it's just it's just that we have more ways to see everything that's going on?
Well, this wasn't about seeing.
I'm sure
if
all
it had
of
been,
this has
if
been
it had
going
been Secret
on.
Service guys downloading porn, no one would have known, okay? Because nobody would have known they didn't pay the bill. What I'm saying is that the decline here is that behavior is so permissive. Everyone knows that the...
But this behavior has been going on.
You got to let me finish. No one would ever allow this under the Bush administration. A guy gets up in the middle of a speech by George W. Bush and in Iraq, and the guy gets up and he throws 2 shoes at George W. Bush, and that went viral. George W. Bush makes the claim, good job, Brownie, and they never let it go. Kanye West says George W. Bush doesn't care about black people. And everyone starts asking, that takes national stage. Is it true? Does George W. Bush not care about black? a no good, a pretty much a public figure like Kanye West, who's got no real standing in American politics, takes precedence when he's affecting something like George W. Bush. Did you hear Barack Obama says that Kanye West is still a jackass? And nobody reported that. In the New York Post just last week, he was asked whether or not he still thinks Kanye West is a jackass. He said yes. No, that wasn't all over the news. But
no.
had George W. Bush gave a speech and said he wished that the Bush tax cuts weren't called the Bush tax cuts, and it's on every news channel. So you get my point, is that the scrutiny of the left towards people like George W. Bush is all over the place. But now, here's 11 Secret Service men caught involved with a prostitution drinking binge at a hotel where they're supposed to be securing the area for the President of the United States. And people are out there going, is it a big deal? And even going so far as, did this happen during the Bush administration? Who knows? It could have. Why are we still going backwards? Why don't we just deal with the issue? Nobody asked when scandals happened during the Bush administration, did they happen under Clinton? Nobody did that. So what I'm saying is that when it's liberals, when it's people like the Barack Obama administration, when it's groups like the Barack Obama administration, it's passed along as nothing. When it happens under Clinton, it's passed along as nothing. Nobody would allow a 19-year-old girl to be in the White House with George W. Bush having sex. George W. Bush's first answer would be, hey, you guys don't mind when Clinton's doing it. That would be his response. That should be his response. What I'm saying is that we've seen a social decline when it comes to the office of the United States and the people surrounding that administration. What I can't understand is how these sons of guns wouldn't pay the poor girl $47. So
I had to look up.
Go ahead, JC. I'm sorry.
I got to look up and see what does U.S. dollar translate in Brazil, Colombia, correct?
In Colombia, yeah.
It's probably like $13.12 or something like that. I have to look this up.
It's probably dirt cheap. You're probably absolutely right. But people don't want to talk about it because they're really upset about it. They know that this is an embarrassment to the administration. And it goes along with a week in Obama's presidency that is really, really hurting. And we're talking about scandal after scandal. The General Service Administration, with their $885,000 junket to Las Vegas, where they were spending the taxpayers' money and making rap videos about how they won't get investigated. The Hillary Rosen issue with Ann Romney hasn't worked a day in her life. The Buffett rule today was completely voted down by Congress just 2 hours ago by a count of 51 to 45. And the question is why isn't anybody saying, God, Obama's having a horrible week? It was even mentioned today on Breitbart TV and Breitbart.com that with all of the mishaps that have happened in 1 week under the Obama administration, 1 week, and we're talking GSA, the Secret Service scandals, the Buffett rule completely being told is gimmicky, Hillary Rosen, with all the hits the Obama administration has taken, Saturday Night Live, which uses satire in the public arena to make their show, went after the GOP over the weekend and never mentioned one gaffe by the Obama administration. Never even once. How does Saturday Night Live not touch on the prostitution debacle? Like, I mean, that's got comedy written all over it. But the truth is that that's the state of our union today. Look, we know that they're shilling for the Obama administration and our public in our mainstream media. It goes without saying, it's disgusting, it's a farce, but how any one of them can call themselves reasonable or legitimate news agencies baffles the crap out of me. But I just wanted to bring that up. I want to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to take a quick break. But when we come back, JC, whatever you do, I want you to alert the folks over at All Negro Media that I have proof that Louis Farrakhan is calling for the death of Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson.
Really?
Oh, I'll put any amount of money on it, my man.
Well, if you put American, if you put 25 American dollars up for it, you can get your Brazilian prostitute.
It is $25?
Yeah.
Damn, he didn't want to pay $25? $45.
Hillary was down there with her $40 making it rain.
Is that how they speak in Colombia?
She down there got her hand up, sliding them $5 off, making it rain.
Yeah, he wouldn't pay her $25. Anyway.
Necesito mi dinero para my rice and beans.
All right, when we come back, we got to get into this. Louis Farrakhan, I think he's calling for the death of Reverend Al Sharpton and Reverend Jesse Jackson, just like his words prompted the shooting and the killing and the assassination, I should say, of Malcolm X.
Yeah.
And I have from his own mouth when we return to Priest on the Radio. Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Priest on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
In Olympics hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekday here on blogtalkradio.com.
Exciting things are happening at Burger King.
Welcome to Burger King.
What's in those new chicken snack wraps?
What's in the new chicken wrap?
Mary?
Crispy chicken, fresh lettuce, three cheeses, fresh dressing, wrapped up in the tasty lava tortilla. Crispy chicken, wrapped up in the...
The new chicken snack wraps. Come and get it.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio. And let me tell you something. Nothing makes my job more perfect than interacting with you, the listeners of the Reese on the Radio show. Eric, you're on with Reese.
Hey, first of all, I want to say that you are very refreshing, my friend.
Thank you, Eric.
I do think there's too much emphasis on the race card.
Sure.
I'm sick of people who want to be treated exactly like everybody else as long as we recognize that they're different.
Yes, that's it. Chris, you're on with Reese.
Yes, hi, Reese. I just had to rebuff that guy that called you and said your arguments were weak.
Sure.
He's basing his vote on something you said, and he's talking about
my arguments weak, right?
Yeah, what a hypocrite. Well, I hope he's still listening. Buddy, you're a hypocrite. You shouldn't even be allowed to vote.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. Steve, you're on with Reese.
Hey, Reese, I got to compliment you. You were wonderful handling that guy who was going to base his whole decision on something you said, which you handled it well. I think you just sealed the deal with the listeners, and you're doing a wonderful job. That's all I wanted to say.
Steve, thank you very, very much, and I appreciate that. It's Reese on the Radio right here, 8 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton, and Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning Our Future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life. In Congress, Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
If you're not listening to Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com, you've got no idea what you're missing. From the Daily Caller, Mr. Matthew Boyle. Matthew, thank you very much for joining us. I'm glad you took some time out for us.
Great to be here, Ray.
Who do we have on the line?
All right. This is Sean Quali, National Spokesman, New Black Panther Party.
Sean Quali, thank you very much for contacting us and being on the show. For all the news and the people making news, make sure you check out Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Warning, the sounds you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, I-L-O-V-E.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. It's Reese on the Radio, and we're back 22 minutes after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. A book that I have to read is that book right there.
Fast and Furious,
yeah. It's a book that talks about how not only how Fast and Furious, the investigation into Fast and Furious by the ATF that got the Border Patrol agent killed. Using weapons that the ATF allowed to go into Mexico and get into the hands of the cartel. She also breaks down the story. Her name is Katie Pavlich. Yeah, who wrote the book. She also talks about how the mainstream media also covered up the investigation after CBS broke the story and the White House called the CBS reporter and screamed and cursed at her. About saying that she was irresponsible for writing it. And a lot of people were saying, oh, nothing to see here, nothing to see here. And now, of course, it's been called for the Attorney General Eric Holder's resignation. And the investigation is ongoing. But anyway, I want to read that book.
Aren't the parents of that the young man suing them?
Yeah, they are suing the federal government for that as well. But it's an interesting book because it takes all aspects.
We talked about that on
the show. Yeah, I played the audio. As I mentioned before, the break, Louis Farrakhan is at it again. And a lot of people may not remember this, but the daughters of Malcolm X, went on a tear on charging Louis Farrakhan, leader of the, what do we call them? The FOI? Fruits of Islam, Nation of Islam, whatever. Head of the Nation of Islam, called on him to pretty much acknowledge that he was responsible for the assassination of their father, Malcolm X. And he refused for a long, long time. And in the 90s, he finally did come forward and say that he apologizes if his words may have incited the violence against our dear brother Malcolm. as many people have reported, guys like Curtis Sliwa has been very vocal about this, leader of the Guardian Angels, that in Newark, New Jersey, the plot was hatched to assassinate Malcolm X at the Audubon Theater in Harlem. And that Louis Farrakhan was very adamant about removing the voice of Malcolm X when he started talking about the leader at the time of the Nation of Islam. I almost said the wrong name. why am I forgetting his name? Muhammad. So anyway, as you know, what was the leader's name at the time?
The Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
Elijah Muhammad, thank you. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And as you know, I mean, we all know, Louis Farrakhan can say some incendiary things. He is an anti-Semite. You know that. He hates Whitey. Honky crack a pig.
I wonder if he, like, just goes around hating white people all day. Like, does he just, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah, I mean, that's...
You know, does he eat, live, and...
That's what he does.
And,
that's,
you know,
that's where his stance is.
I wonder how sad it is to feel hatred all day long. Like, you go to sleep with it, you wake up. Because if you hate white people like that, you're surrounded by whiteys everywhere. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
The crackers are all over the place.
And that's what he can't stand.
And if you hate something that much, how freaking miserable are you? Like, how much energy is that taking out of you every single moment?
I couldn't
pack
agree
up your
more.
Pillsbury dough crust, your cans of beans, and take your pies to Africa.
I couldn't agree more. But what I found striking today was some audio of Louis Farrakhan, Minister Louis Farrakhan, talking about leaders. Now, a lot of people went the wrong direction with this because they thought that when he said this line, and I'll play it for you, but when he said this line that he may be directing this at Barack Obama. But see, I always look deeper. You have to pay close attention to what he says. You tell me if he's talking about Barack Obama or he's talking about Jesse Jackson and Reverend Al Sharpton. Because I believe, personally, he's got to be talking about them. This is the type of stuff he does. He's Louis Farrakhan.
Now, if you want to lead black people, you can't love money more than you love your people. You can't love the big house, the big car, more than you love the advancement of your people, because the enemy prints money every day that has no value. So there is no real leadership if it's not rooted in moral character. We want to be leaders, right? For sure. You sure? You better check yourself. Because leadership is nothing to play with. Because people tomorrow, maybe in a few days, are going to kill their leaders who've been selling them out. That's why we're in the shape that we're in right now, because we had corrupt people, or people who started off good and got corrupted.
People who started off good and got corrupted. Now tell me he's talking about, everyone's trying to paint that as a slight towards Barack Obama. But Barack Obama is no leader of black people. He's talking about black leadership here, folks. Black leadership.
Wow.
He's very consistent in this.
He didn't mince his words either.
Of course he didn't mince any words.
There was no smoke screen, no highfalutin long words surrounding it. It was just point blank.
Well, for 3 days, people might start.
He said in a few days they're going to kill their leaders. Now, if he's not sending out a message, I mean, I don't care what anybody says, this is reminiscent of the days of Malcolm X.
He just called on the sleeper cell.
I mean, this screams of going after so-called leaders. You want to be leaders, don't you? Well, leadership ain't something you mess with. You better check yourself.
Before you wreck yourself.
I thought he was going to say before you riggedy wreck yourself, to be honest. I was thinking the same thing. I was hoping.
It's like he really, really activated a sleeper cell.
I'm telling you, he's calling out black leadership.
When was this?
This was, if not today, yesterday. Had to have been today. I'm almost certain it was today. But it was in Memphis. Now, there's no way he's not. There's no way he's talking about Barack Obama.
But I love how he talks about money to all the people. You can't be concerned about money more than your people. So, where does Louis Farrakhan live? What kind of car does he drive?
Again?
What does he have on his back?
This is something that people have been saying, and I'll get into this later in my conversation with Silky Smooth down in Baton Rouge. He talked about the same thing. The argument that's always been within the black community, at least where he is, where he talks about it, is that people are often critical, of the religious faith, you know, people, pastors, you know, whatever, fathers, those people in religious communities who are taking money while speaking at the pulpit and driving around in fancy cars.
Exactly.
You know, but if you listen, Louis Farrakhan is clearly talking about black leadership. He's talking about how there are people in the black community or black leadership taking money from the enemy, the people, for people who they're supposed to be supporting, and the money that has no value. This is clearly what the likes of Al Sharpton and Reverend Jesse Jackson have done. You don't have to read between the lines. It's plain as day. And it's right there.
Now, if you want to lead black people, you can't love money more than you love your people. You can't love the big house, the big car, more than you love the advancement of your people, because the enemy prints money every day that has no value. So there is no real leadership if it's not rooted in moral character. You want to be leaders, right? You sure? You sure? You better check yourself. Because leadership is nothing to play with. Because people tomorrow, maybe in a few days, are going to kill their leaders who've been selling them out. That's why we're in the shape that we're in right now, because we had corrupt people, or people who started off good and got corrupted.
Come on. People who started off good. So-called leaders. Now, I'll be the first to tell you, I know Louis Farrakhan is no fan of Messy Jesse Jackson. I know he's no fan. I mean, because if that is not a clear stab at him, my friends, I don't know what is. Started off good. And you know what he means by that. Started off good with the likes of Martin Luther King Jr. And then got corrupted, selling out their people. Jesse Jackson does that often. He used the platforms of a platform of black injustice for monetary gain. Al Sharpton does it as well. Marches.
Does Farrakhan not do it?
No, where does it, do you ever see him standing and marching and protesting corporate organizations? They wouldn't give him a dime. They wouldn't give him a dime. And Louis Farrakhan, to give him a bit of integrity, he wouldn't go to any one of those organizations, let's say run by Jews, who he vilifies often. How much of a hypocrite would he be protesting those financial establishments and then taking money from those establishments in order to get the protesters to move from in front of the buildings? He knew he'd be called out in a minute. So what does he do? He's got the brothers out there selling bean pies in the final call. Now, that's not to ridicule him, but he's out there doing – that's what he's doing. And the donations that he gets – I'm sure he gets charitable contributions for people who believe in his cause. But the bottom line is, you know, he gets financial – he got financial backing from the likes of Muammar Gaddafi, whom he was friends with. He went on a trip there with Reverend Jeremiah Wright to go meet – Muammar Gaddafi many, many moons ago in the 90s, took a pilgrimage to Libya. So he gets his funding, but he would never, ever go to go to the Jews and use his bully pulpit to get money from them. They would call him a hypocrite from the get-go. But he knows the likes of Reverend Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton will scream bloody murder. Al Sharpton, not too long ago, was it 2009, 2010, when there was a cartoon that was in the New York Post of two police officers shooting a monkey in reference to the attack that happened in Connecticut when the woman got her face slashed by a monkey?
Uh-huh.
There's a cartoon in the New York Post where two cops shoot a gorilla, and the cop is in a caption saying, now somebody else will have to write the stimulus bill. And they immediately attributed that to two cops calling Barack Obama a monkey. So Al Sharpton went out there and stood in front of News Corp's building in New York City and protested for days. Al Sharpton got called up to the offices. Maybe he met with Rupert Murdoch. Maybe he didn't. But whomever he wrote up in there, all of a sudden there were no more protests of the New York Post or News Corp. It went away. But I'm sure if you check the financial records of the National Action Network, you'll find other organizations who were out there giving Al Sharpton a stipend. Upwards of $2,500 a month to support the National Action Network? I mean, how else do they get their money? The National Action Network can't be getting their funding from the poor black community they claim to be protesting for. They wouldn't survive a day. You look at the Rainbow Coalition, the Rainbow Push Coalition, and the money they've received from Texaco, billions. The money they received from PepsiCo, billions, to go to his little cohorts in their organization down in Wall Street. They've been profiting off the disenfranchisement of African Americans for eons. So what Louis Farrakhan is talking about is clearly the example of guys like Reverend Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, who have been using their black community to profit from the enemy that prints money that has no worth. How could I be wrong?
I mean, I heard exactly what you heard.
How could I be wrong? I mean, JC, is he calling for the death of Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson? Yes or no?
Blatantly. Without question. And you should see his house.
He's talking about
money. His house dubs as a mosque, but it is absolutely beautiful.
Well, you got to send me a photo. I got to see where Screwy Louie lives.
Well, I could do you one better. I could send you a video.
Oh! wait a minute. Does he have one of those real estate videos like Lord Styles of the Rich and Famous? We go to the home of anti-Semite Louis Farrakhan and his palatial mosque and pad. Over here, Louis Farrakhan is serving a meal of bean pies and non-pork products. We go out to the swimming pool. We're outside. There are glaciers. Glaciers of ice sculptures. I can't even go any further. I love Robin Leach. That's my
favorite. Yeah,
it's
pathetic.
Listen, I'm sorry to say it, but if there's anybody who should be offended right now that he's calling for the death of, and I don't care what anybody says, he is calling for the death of Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. It cannot be denied. It can't be.
Yeah. Hey, but listen, I sent you two links. I sent you one earlier on Facebook. Not that one. I want you to check that one out a little later on.
I saw that. I want to talk about that later on. It's about Tupac, right?
I saw it live.
I was actually a little amazed, too. Have you seen it yet?
I was freaked by it.
It's pretty brilliant. But we'll get into that a little later. I just wanted to make that one claim. Regardless of what anybody else is trying to suggest, the bottom line is that Louis Farrakhan and Reverend Al and Jesse Jackson are going to have to respond. They're going to have to respond to this. Well, they need to repudiate the rantings of a lunatic. I mean, I thought the whole past couple of months it had been this white-on-black war. But this is clearly a truth. It's black-on-black crime. As suspected. The black man doesn't have to fear the white man. Screwy Louie is calling for the violence against two black men. Whether you like it or not, my black people. Brother, brother, call your mother. Because y'all ain't related no more. That's the bottom line. I don't...
Never mind breaking the greens at my house.
There'll be
no cornbread sharing between us.
I cannot believe that Screwy Louie has got a video of his pad. Is it like the real estate agent does when they show you when you could go online and you could see all the great features of the home? They got like a helicopter view going over on top.
No. This is obviously taken by this is basically a fan's view of it.
Oh,
but
is it?
It is amazing. I did some checking to make sure that, you know, that it stated properly that it was his mosque and his home, and I found that listed in at least four of the sources.
Oh, I got
that the mosque is his home, and it's very palatial.
I gotta see it. I'm sorry, folks. I gotta call it like it is. Louis Farrakhan is calling for the death of Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, like it or not. That's the case. We'll be back. It's on the radio. Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and if you missed the show, you probably missed this little thing that I revealed for the first time since 2007.
I'll give you another example. I've got a crush on a Slurpee. I love Coca-Cola Slurpees. Love them. I'll get the biggest one there is. I don't care how filled my bladder. I'm telling you, I've had four of them in a day, and we're talking about the big 64-ounce. I am in love with a Coca-Cola Slurpee. When I used to live in Fort Lee, New Jersey, I used to walk 7 blocks in New Jersey to get to the 7-Eleven and go get me a Coca-Cola Slurpee. Now, for a little time, back in 2007, I had an official Coke problem.
Okay. Very funny.
Tune in weeknights from 7 to 10 right here on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. You never know what I'm going to reveal.
One time racism saved my life, man. I was on a plane. I was coming from overseas, and I don't know how this guy got a machine gun on the plane, but he stood up, man. He said, "Everybody, get on the ground. Nobody look at my face." I started freaking out because he was Chinese. I was like, "Why is he talking like that?" Was screaming and crying. I was the only brother on the plane. Well, I thought I was the only brother. I looked over. There was one other black dude. He's from Nigeria. I looked over at him. He was looking right in my face, man. He didn't say two words to me. He just looked at me. He was like... He
that nigga talk, I know what he's talking about. I look right back at him. That's right. So my dudes on the front of the plane seen us. They were like, oh, my God. I think those black guys are going to try to save us. We were just communicating that we understood the situation. We were both seeing the same thing. What we understood was simple. Terrorists don't take black hostages. That's the truth. I have yet to see one of us on the news reading the hostage letter.
They is treating us good. We all chilling and shit. I'd like to give a shout out to Ray Ray and Big Steve and Central Newport.
You're not going to see it. Terrorists are smart. They know what they're doing there, you know. They terrorists. They know it was black people's bad bargaining chips. They called the White House and said, hello? We have got five black... Hello?
Hey, guys, it's Reese on the radio. And are you nervous about calling Reese on the radio with 347-308-8701? That's fine. You can send us an email at reeseontheradio@yahoo.com. We'll take all of your emails and we'll read them on the air. Don't like the show? We'll read it. Like the show? We'll definitely read it. You're indifferent about the show? We'll read it. Whatever it is you've got to say, we'll read it. Just send an email to reeseontheradio@yahoo.com. That's right, reeseontheradio@yahoo.com. Get your comments live on the air. Get your views. Get your position made. Whatever it is that you've got to say, just email us at reeseontheradio@yahoo.com.
In Delaware, the largest growth in population is Indian American, moving from India. You cannot go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent. I'm not joking.
Hi, Bill Maher here. Sarah Palin agreed to do commentary at Fox News, which is actually very similar to her day job, talking to a baby with Down syndrome.
Speaking of dumb
dogs, it's not because they have breasts, it's because they are boobs.
I hope Sarah Palin gets in so that they split the MILF vote.
That's not sexist.
I would like to announce a donation to the Obama Super PAC.
I thought about Malia and Sasha. I want them to be able to speak their mind in a civil and thoughtful way, and I don't want them attacked or called horrible names because they're being good citizens.
I would like to give that PAC $1 million.
Sarah Palin, the strange family of inbred weirdos. She fucked Levi over and over until a baby fell out. The Maverick and the Milk. They fined CBS $1 million for Janet Jackson's nipple. Think what they could get for Hillary Clinton's cunt. That's not sexist.
All decent folks can agree. The remarks that were made don't have any place in the public discourse.
She is the chair of the Democratic National Committee.
I don't know any woman in America that thinks that being called a slut is funny.
Please welcome Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Being part of a democracy involves argument and disagreements and debate, and there's a way to do it that doesn't involve you being demeaned and insulted.
Speaking of dumb dogs, this is a Category 5 moron we have on our hands, and I am unapologetic.
Top 10 highlights of Sarah Palin's trip to New York City. Number 2, what makeup at Bloomingdale's? Update her slutty flight attendant look.
I'm going to try to lead by example.
During the 7th inning, her daughter was knocked up by Alex Rodriguez.
To send a message to all our young people, I'm going to try to lead by example.
Speaking of dumb quads, Maher decided to help President Obama out and give him a financial boost.
He's donated $1 million.
Last week, I said goodbye to $1 million. I made a contribution to Obama's Super PAC.
This ends up being a teachable moment.
I wouldn't put anything past this stupid country.
All decent folks can agree. The remarks that were made don't have any place in the public discourse. I'm going to try to lead by example in this situation.
You're seeing a president adopt policies which affect our economy,
based not upon what's right for the American worker, but instead what's right for their politics. The National Labor Relations Board, now stacked with union stooges selected by the president, says to a free enterprise like Boeing, you can't build a factory in South Carolina because South Carolina is a right-to-work state. That is simply un-American. It's political payback of the worst kind. It is wrong for America, and it is something that will stop under my administration. I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
It's Reese on the Radio, and we're back 10 minutes till the top of the hour, right here on blogtalkradio.com. On this, your Monday, it's April the 16th, 2012. Little slum village back there. It's a little bumper plan. Produced by Jay Dilla, one of my favorite producers of all time. I wanted to bring this up, speaking of Al Sharpton in the last break and Louis Farrakhan. This struck me as odd because this is an important subject because, you know, as I consistently say about black-on-black crime, it's widespread in every facet of crime. And when I say every facet of crime, I mean doing things that are harmful in a social economic way towards black people. That is black on black crime. What I found strange was that what I'm about to play for you was actually, I couldn't believe it happened here at the National Action Network's conference that took place in Washington, D.C. last week. And the audio I'm about to play for you is of some statements made by Alfred C. Higgins III. He is the CEO of the black-owned network Radio One. And Radio One not only runs radio, but they run television as well. In fact, they took over TV One and just put it all, they pretty much consolidated it into just Radio One. Black-owned business, seventh largest consolidated radio network in the country, seventh largest. And he is at the National Action Network sitting next to Andrea Mitchell of NBC News on the podium. Oh, he's on the dais, speaking to people of the National Action Network, and he's talking about, you know, the state of our union in the black community. Two young ladies, 112, 117. In fact, let me rephrase that. 117 and 112. The reason why I'm telling you that is because the first girl who speaks is 17. The second girl who speaks is 12. They are both African-American girls. They are president of their local National Action Network Teen Coalition. They are presidents. 117, 112. Now, Alfred C. Higgins is talking about the state of black America. They allow two people to come forward. These two young ladies come up and they ask two questions, and they ask Alfred C. Higgins, CEO of Radio One, to answer them. The question is whether or not he gives a reasonable answer to their obvious questions. Here's Alfred C. Higgins.
And in Houston in particular recently, I got a lot of heat from the community because we took a gospel station off the air. We put an all-news station, general market all-news station, on the air. So I thought, and there was no all-news station. There was only right-wing news talk radio, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity. I thought Houston deserved an all-news station. But the community reared up and used it as an opportunity to attack our hip-hop station and wanted me to change the music and play positive hip-hop and things of that nature. And I had to explain to them that, you know, there is a segment of the population that wants this music, your kids, your young adults that are in your family. That radio station, by the way, the hip-hop station, is the number one station in the market, right? lot of money with it. So, you know, we have a responsibility as a media outlet to reflect all segments of the marketplace and what consumers want, not just what one segment perceives to be positive in nature and in values. And also, by the same token, as a media outlet, I don't feel it's our responsibility to try to shape, you know, the minds and the values of the people who partake in consume our outlets. That happens at home. That's what you do with your kids. That's what I do with my son. You know, and I don't think any government, any media outlet, any third party organization, you know, should be saddled with that burden. It's we as parents who have to be saddled with that burden. So, you know.
Our question is directed toward Mr. Alfred. You said that your radio station plays rap music because it makes money, but drug dealers sell drugs. Does that necessarily make it right?
And rap music creates negative stereotypes in our communities. So we just want to know, would you rather play music that degrades us and dumbs our African American people down just to make money?
My answer, the reason we play rap music is, you know, we go after an audience. We try to get the largest possible audience that we can. And rap music, you know, I have to be honest with you, rap music has been a phenomenon in the African-American community that has created many, many, many economic opportunities. One of the problems that I have is that the mainstream media always puts up our sports stars and our music stars as the most successful of our community. The fact of the matter is that those are the areas that black people have generated the most income en masse. And that music comes out of our culture. It comes out of the cities that we live in. And the fact of the matter is if we don't portray that, if we don't highlight that artistry, somebody else will do it. And the audience wants it. I mean, you know, people want to listen to it, and we make sure that we try to be as stringent as possible so that we don't, you know, cross any sort of degrading guidelines that would negatively be affecting, you know, the audience. But, you know, we don't, you know, control the artistry from that perspective, and I don't ultimately look at that as tantamount to being a drug dealer. I understand you made a very powerful point, and it's a very controversial issue, but, you know, if we don't reflect the culture coming out of our communities, we're not doing our job as a media outlet.
Okay, well, I disagree.
Okay.
Now, see, there's some interesting things that he said in his statement in responding to the young lady, who makes a very profound statement. Her question, for that matter, is very profound. She says, bottom line, just because it makes money doesn't make it right. Drug dealers sell drugs. They're doing it to make money. In essence, that's what it is you're doing, right? People want drugs. That's why he sells, supply and demand, right? But you wouldn't say that it was okay for him to sell drugs. She's equating the rap music to drugs. It's hurting our community. When we come back, I want to play that again so that we can grasp it. He makes a very, very sad retort to her claim. Now, the second girl's 12 years old. You know, would you profit off the dumbing down of our people? His answer is yes. But he not only says yes, he also says, it's you Negroes who want it. And if we don't supply the demand that you Negroes want, someone else is going to do it. You Negroes want it. It ain't our fault. We'll be back.
Today does mark the beginning of the end.
The most sweeping economic recovery package in history. The package is the right size. It is the right scope. It has the right priorities to create 3 to 4 million jobs. The federal government is the only entity left with the resources to jolt our economy back into life. 3.5 million jobs over the next 2 years.
Look at me. The stimulus is working.
Meaning 8 out of every 10 stimulus dollars for wind power have gone to foreign companies.
Not even a good junk bond.
Unemployment's still very high.
It appears that 1.2 million people dropped out of the labor force in 1 month.
I'm not going to say the recession is over until the unemployment rate is down to normal levels, certainly in the 5% range.
It knew the cars would be assembled in Denver.
The FBI raided bankrupt
Solyndra. Jobs in China.
$700,000 to create joke-telling software.
I didn't overpromise.
Shovel Ready was not as shovel ready as we expected.
The Republican National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Mary had a little lamb in sleep white as snow. And everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool. Ah!
I never once said Nagada.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Unmute your mic, buddy.
And in Houston in particular recently, I got a lot of heat from the community because we took a gospel station off the air. We put an all-news station, general market all-news station, on the air. So I thought, and there was no all-news station. There was only right-wing news talk radio, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity. I thought Houston deserved an all-news station. But the community reared up and used it as an opportunity to attack our hip-hop station and wanted me to change the music and play positive hip-hop and things of that nature. And I had to explain to them that, you know, there is a segment of the population that wants this music, your kids, your young adults that are in your family. That radio station, by the way, the hip-hop station, is the number one station in the market, right? And we make a lot of money with it. So, you know,
hello? You there? Hello? Why am I not hearing anything? This is odd. I'll try to call back in. Hello?
Please stand by. Reese on the Radio will return in a few moments. We're just handling some business in the background. But don't worry, Reese on the Radio will return in a moment. Hey, I said we'll be back. Relax. Where are you going? What, are you logging off? No, relax, okay? We'll be back. It's Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. Hey, why don't you give us a call? The number's 347-308-8701. It's Reese on the Radio, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Testing, testing.
All right, there we go. We're having a little weirdness going on there, JC. I have no idea what happened. Can you hear me now?
Loud and clear. I don't know what was going on.
That was absolutely insane, and I apologize to everyone listening for that.
I started to bust a rap. Spit a hot 16. I didn't know what to do for a moment.
Yeah, I was worried about
I didn't know if it was
that.
Mine or yours.
Yeah, I think it was me on my end, but everything else appeared to be going straight. Again, we apologize, folks. 8 minutes after the hour. I wanted to play this audio again of Alfred C. Higgins, and his on the phone with us now is Kool-Aid Man James Montgomery. I'm glad you joined us, James, because I want to play this audio back for those of you who had some audio problems. We were talking about Alfred C. Higgins, who is the CEO of Radio One, the organization that has since consolidated with TV One. They own both networks, and now it's all Radio One. And now they're at the National Action Network last week talking about rap music and talking about how they've sort of conducted business in sort of each music medium, so to speak, with news talk, with gospel, and with everything. Okay, so this is Alfred C. Higgins III at the National Network Action Network National, I guess, conference that takes place in Washington, D.C. every year. And this is what he had to say.
And in Houston in particular recently, I got a lot of heat from the community because we took a gospel station off the air. We put an all-news station, general market all-news station, on the air. So I thought, and there was no all-news station. There was only right-wing news talk radio, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity. I thought Houston deserved an all-news station. But the community reared up and used it as an opportunity to attack our hip-hop station and wanted me to change the music and play positive hip-hop and things of that nature. And I had to explain to them that, you know, there is a segment of the population that wants this music, your kids, your young adults that are in your family. That radio station, by the way, the hip-hop station, is the number one station in the market, right? And we make a lot of money with it. So, you know, we have a responsibility as a media outlet to reflect all segments of the marketplace and what consumers want, not just what one segment perceives to be positive in nature and in values. And also, by the same token, as a media outlet, I don't feel it's our responsibility to try to shape, you know, the minds and the values of the people who partake in consumer outlets. That happens at home. That's what you do with your kids. That's what I do with my son. You know, and I don't think any government, any media outlet, any third party organization, you know, should be saddled with that burden. It's we as parents who have to be saddled with that burden. So, you know, I
question is directed toward Mr. Alfred. You said that your radio station plays rap music because it makes money, but drug dealers sell drugs. Does that necessarily make it right?
And rap music creates negative stereotypes in our communities. So we just want to know, would you rather play music that degrades us and dumbs our African-American people down just to make money?
My answer, the reason we play rap music is, you know, we go after an audience. We try to get the largest possible audience that we can. And rap music, you know, I have to be honest with you, rap music has been a phenomenon in the African-American community that has created many, many, many economic opportunities. One of the problems that I have is that the mainstream media always puts up our sports stars and our music stars as the most successful of our community. The fact of the matter is that those are the areas that black people have generated the most income en masse. And that music comes out of our culture. It comes out of the cities that we live in. And the fact of the matter is if we don't portray that, if we don't highlight that artistry, somebody else will do it. And the audience wants it. I mean, you know, people want to listen to it, and we make sure that we try to be as stringent as possible so that we don't, you know, cross any sort of degrading guidelines that would negatively be affecting, you know, the audience. But, you know, we don't, you know, control the artistry from that perspective, and I don't ultimately look at that as tantamount to being a drug dealer. I understand you made a very powerful point, and it's a very controversial issue, but, you know, if we don't reflect the culture coming out of our communities, we're not doing our job as a media outlet.
Well, I disagree.
Okay.
Yeah. So they disagree with him, but again, what Albert C. Higgins III, CEO of Radio 1, is saying is that you Negroes want it. You Negroes want it. You love it. You need it. You got to have it. Like a drug. And we are going to provide it. Because if we don't, someone else will. Isn't that the bottom line, JC?
That's the bottom line. But if it's the number one station in the market, the hell is what a 13 or 12-year-old wants?
Yeah, exactly. What? They don't care. Alfred C. Higgins is saying, and she's asking a very important question.
She is.
Would you consistently play music that denigrates our community for money? And his answer is absolutely.
Why not?
Absolutely. So these are your black leaders. Telling you want it, you got to have it.
I wonder what station they're talking about.
Well, it's Radio 1 in Houston. I don't know what their station is out there.
Hold on. I know. Wait a minute. Hold on. See, now this is why I kind of freak out at. Because every day I listen to KRNB in Houston. Every single day. And it's adult urban contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
They play, it's slow jams. It's slow jams all day.
Right.
It's smooth slow jams all day long. They throw an occasional Kirk Franklin.
Okay.
They'll throw in an occasional, what's her name with your big mouth? Yolanda Adams.
Okay.
What are they complaining about? They have KRNB.
Well, yeah, of course, his greatest argument is, look, if you don't like what we play, turn the station.
Turn the station. But if Radio 1 has the number one station in that market, and it happens to be the hip-hop and R&B, they need it. Do you know what their stocks are trading at right this minute?
What are they trading at?
99 cents still.
Yeah, and it's really awful over there. It is. It's really pathetic. But
I need to buy some.
James, do you understand what Alfred C. Higgins is saying? It doesn't matter what kind of music you people, you groups out there say you want positive hip-hop. Well, you're not large enough of a group. We're number one in our market because they want this negative rap, and we're going to give it to them. Isn't this completely contrary to the whole quote-unquote National Action Network's movement, or to the pro-black movement?
Actually, I'm really, it's going to be kind of hard to get across where I fall on this, because I do understand the one aspect of it, the money-making aspect of it. The thing is, yes, there is that the music that denigrates and all that. But what he's saying is, we are a company that is pretty much controlled by our listeners.
That's right.
And if they're asking for this song, or any song, any artist, over and over and over again, if we don't play that, then we don't last.
We don't profit.
It's not even that you don't profit.
Well,
it's
you can't survive as a radio, as any business for that matter, if you don't profit. You know what I mean?
Clear Channel will come in the back door. They'll stick a station in there.
That's
CBS
right.
Will.
They don't have to care. They'll find a couple of black people who want to, you know, who want to introduce the latest hip hop and R&B, and they'll jump right on that ship, and they'll promote all that bang bang shit about Negro Die Slow. They will definitely promote.
And then charge you twice as much for the advertising of your local business.
Exactly. So, look, it doesn't
matter. But only because there are people asking for it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I know that, look, again, the black community is in conflict with itself. You understand what I'm saying here?
I was going to say, black on black hate
Blacks, blacks are in conflict with themselves.
They will never stand up to CBS or...
I don't know if it's going on like that either, but...
It's very clear. There are people within the black community who don't want this music being sort of funneled to their young children. And here it is, a black-owned organization that's saying, I'm sorry, I know you think it's bad, but we got to do it because this is what they want. You want us to survive and be a black network, so they're in conflict. I mean, does the black community want a black organization to fail? Absolutely not. And then they're saying, look, we'll support you if you play more positive music. And then they turn around and they do it, and no one listens to them, and then they fail. So,
And I see, this is where that's the line where I draw. That's the line I draw. Because, yes, you do have people asking for this and asking for that. Because usually that's the only music they can either relate to, or that's the music that's pushed out to them.
Right.
However, yes, generate your airwaves, or you have to, what's the word I'm looking for, justify you being on the airwaves. But when you are the number one station there, okay, once you are there, then you can start to funnel in. Well, look, if you like that, you can like this, all right?
Yeah, that's never ever going to work.
You know how to solve that problem?
No. How is it not going to work? Because if you claim to be the number one station that everybody listens to, all right, and then when you go to your people paying you the money or buying your radio spots, okay, we have the ear. Well, if you have the ear, then you have the standpoint to say, okay, look, all right, yes, I know that's popular, but guess what? Here's somebody else here.
Yeah, but nobody they radio stations work with what works, and they believe that the model that they have works. so they continue with it. They're consistent with it. Nobody's going to change their model and take a risk like that. It's just like record labels. Record labels know, I can't put this out because it's not proven.
That's not true. That's not true. Because, well, regular, well,
James, when Reese and I were in Hartford, and right before going back to New York with the morning show, I had a meeting with the program director, a guy named Michael. I'm not going to spit his last name out there. And I've been doing radio in that market, in the Hartford market, since I was 16 years old. And everything that I've said about, that I told Reese and the whole crew, everything that I told them about that, about the listeners for that particular area, came from experience. I was dead right on all of it. Now, Power 1041, they brought in, like I said, they brought in the program director, Mike, from out of Houston.
Yeah, he was out of Houston. You're absolutely
right.
He came
out of Houston. And I begged him and told him what he needed to do to turn the station around in this particular market. And he totally ignored me. But then again, I mean, who am I for him to believe? Except, I mean, the only thing I can tell him is that I did radio in his market. And at that point, it was up to almost 18, 19 years. And he didn't listen. I think he basically ignored the advice that I gave him. And I mean, when I say I begged because I wanted to remain at that station when they went back to New York.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to produce the show out of Hartford in the morning. But I begged and begged and begged this guy to listen. This is what you got to do. He ignored me. Shortly thereafter, station flipped the switch to rock.
That's right. That sure enough did. It didn't last long. It did not last long.
It did not last long. And see, in my market here in Connecticut, it's a real finicky market. If you can get over in this market on radio, the only way you're going to get over is by really getting out and getting in touch with the people. And the Connecticut, your Connecticut listeners have to feel as though they can, like they know the DJs in order to make it successful. And that's what the other station, the other hip-hop station in Hartford did. And
the hot station out in Hartford.
Farmington.
They've always been, in Farmington, they've always been very, very much involved in their community. But the thing in Houston is that we're talking about Houston. And look at the groups that have come out of Houston. You know, I talked about this in the last half hour. You know, the groups that come out of Houston, you got Scarface, the Ghetto Boys, you got Jay Prince. You got all of those groups in the Jay Prince fashion. You got UGK, you know, Pimp C, Bun B. Look at the music that they produce that's out there. It's all ghetto-fied. That's what all of that music is. So everything that they put out there, the audience loves because it is the lowest common denominator. There's no way that Alfred C. Higgins is going to change that format and try something new or try to spice it up a little bit to sort of get both groups because somebody's going to feel it and they have a... Not that I'm saying that it won't work, James. I believe it might work. But what I'm more worried about in that regard is that... Or what he would be more worried about is if we try something new and the audience doesn't accept it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's the mentality in the music business, and especially in radio.
Well, that's the mentality anywhere.
And they're already a fledgling company.
But again, it was like you were saying on Sunday night. You know, it's kind of hard to be different when all you're trying to be is the same.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
You know what to solve that problem?
If you have that standpoint, because you made this distinction when you talked about, just for one, for instance, the whole Oprah debacle, Oprah in Africa.
Right.
All right. And yet you said, well, then she could be considered as walking away from a crime.
Absolutely.
You have the ear.
I agree with you.
So then,
I agree with you, but what did he do? But wait, wait, wait. Listen to what Alfred C. Higgins says he did. He says that he got rid of the gospel station. He had exactly what he did was, look, he had an inspirational station. He got rid of it. He got criticized for it, but he didn't care because the only thing he cared about was the profit he was getting from the hip-hop and R&B station, which is number one. He wasn't getting the numbers he liked.
The only reason, see, the thing is, everybody's blaming him. You can't blame him.
Well, I have to blame him because he's the CEO. That's
he made
his
a decision.
Job.
He's the CEO. Yes, he's the
right,
CEO. But once he got rid of it, okay,
listen,
the only reason, and he said it himself, the only reason he got rid of it is because he had more of a groundswell of support for the hip-hop station.
I agree. I agree with that. Again, I'm not slighting him. I just thought that the girls brought up a very valuable, and this is, the girls were 17 and 12 years old, respectively, and I think they brought up a valid point. Do we have Derek the Bounty Hunter on the line? Is he coming in with breaking news from Florida?
I think he's just going to be listening.
Oh, is he? Okay,
unless he's
right.
Got some news.
Oh, God, please, go on.
I don't know, I said unless he has some.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see if he does have any news.
Oh, man. I was just listening to your topic, brother.
No. We're talking about the hip-hop community. And I'll let you just listen. What we were breaking down was the fact that the black community is in conflict with itself because here's the CEO of a black company, you know, that has a nationwide radio organization, and there were members of the black community that are saying, hey, you know, you're a black-owned company. You run radio. You run media. We need to see more positive messages played on our radio stations. And he's pretty much outright telling them, too bad, the Negroes want violence. Bang, bang, shoot them up, Negro, that's left.
No, that's not what he was saying.
He said this works. It's what works for them. He's saying
right.
that there
right.
is a large
because,
amount
but
of
he also, want. But he also quantified that by the fact that he was listening to his listeners. And he said it. He said it himself. Your kids are calling in.
James, you're repeating exactly what I said. He said that the audience is dictating what he plays. He said, look, the audience is responding. It's your children. It's your young adults, the ones in your family, who are telling us this is what we want. We want to hear about grills and skills. We want to hear about cars and rims. We want to hear about bang, bang, shoot 'em up, Negro, die slow. That's what we want to hear, and that's what you're going to get. And so the black community is in conflict with itself.
I told you, there's a solution to this.
What's the solution?
You've got Darius Rucker, and you got Lionel Richie now doing it, and you got Kennedy Burris doing
they
country.
They don't want
to
hear that. These young people want to hear about how they sipping in the club. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
they
want to have
be
it
sipping
both
in the
ways.
Club. No, I know they can't have it both ways. He says that, look, this is the artistry coming from our communities, and we need to promote that. And the artistry coming from our communities is talking about rims, is talking about females, it's misogyny, all of that. That's what's coming out.
No, it ain't just that. It's the ones making the most money. But I really have to draw the line where people talk about rap music, okay, or hip-hop, and it's just the misogyny in this. And, you know, the misogyny and all the negatives. Okay?
And the
because there are a lot of artists out there and have been over the years.
Yeah, but, you know, the sad part is that it's all hip-hop now. There's no more hip-hop.
Oh, yeah, they know that. I know. But, you know, they're promoting the lowest negative common denominator. And that's local crap
from the local.
Exactly. And you know, it's sad, but...
And
you know,
the thing is, you know what? A lot of it is the fact that it's not even just our community who's controlling this. Because, you know, and I know I'm going to get a lot of flack, but a lot of white people, they love to hear that.
Oh,
absolutely.
Of course, because white people...
Who's calling in more?
Listen to me. White people love to hear... listen to and watch Negroes act a fool. They get a thrill out of that.
No. With all due respect, Reese, we got their children.
Oh, I know. I understand that we got their children. But the bottom line is that inherently white folks love to see Negroes cooning and buffooning.
I
don't know about cooning and buffooning, All I know is, basically, it's not even Coonan, all right? It's not Stephen Fetchett. It's the bad boy, the one who's booking the rules.
Go ahead, Derek,
the bounty hunter.
All right, look, first of all, I mean, you know, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but nobody, no music, regardless if it's hip-hop, whatever type of music you listen to, nobody's trying to teach anything, okay? So they need to stop trying to learn some type of positive message out of music, okay? There is none. It's just entertainment, okay? Everybody needs to get beyond that part, number one. Number two, I don't know if you guys noticed, but if they have any sports that black people aren't involved in, there's no ratings, man. I mean, regardless of whatever y'all want to say, black people are exciting, baby. It is what it is. All right.
Really?
If you do not believe so, then how come they continue? I mean, all of our lives, they put the NHL on those secondary networks, dude.
Actually, the NHL. Right. Hold on. The NHL is not only on ESPN now, but now it's on NBC on Saturday.
And the NHL
has had an extreme boosted ratings during this playoff season right now. They were just talking about that on ESPN today, that the ratings for the NHL has boomed.
Yes, the ratings in the NHL has boomed.
They're still behind basketball, still behind baseball, still behind NFL, dude.
Well, black people don't dominate baseball.
They will always be the point.
Wait, hold on. Derek, you're wrong. Black people do not dominate baseball.
We're on our way.
No. Latinos dominate that sport. Slow it down.
Come on, man. We all know that those are the black ball players from DR, man.
Wait. Five African American basketball players that make in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Wait, say what? Say that again?
Name five baseball players who has signed a contract for hundreds of millions of dollars. I can name one.
Dude, my whole thing is this, right? When y'all sit there and say the Latin ball players, man, they're all the damn black guys from DR, bro. You know what I'm saying? Come on, man. Let's keep it real, man.
The bottom line is that the black people want the violence. They want the skill.
Dude, black people are exciting, dude. Black people are exciting, man.
Yes, they are. Right. As long as they're killing
man.
Each other. They are interesting.
No, it's not even the killing each other. It's the fact that, you know, everyone wants to be the guy who bucks the rules.
Yes,
you know, I can do whatever I want, and you're going to listen to it. And it's not just black people. It's white people too.
James, I agree with you. I agree with you wholeheartedly. But the bottom line is, everybody wants to be black until the cops are called. That's the bottom line. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about Tupac Shakur. He's back from the dead.
Not again.
Right
no.
Yes, Wait till you hear this. We'll be back in 3 seconds.
When do you see this?
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Trying a brand new menu item at McDonald's isn't risky. You know what's risky? Petting a stray pit bull or shaving your head just to see how it would look. That's risky. Naming your son Sue, super risky. Giving your friends your Facebook password, ultra risky. So trying a new menu item at McDonald's is about a zero on the old risker scale. Try a snack size of our new Chicken McBites for free with purchase of any extra value meal from January 30th through February 5th. New at McDonald's means no risk, delicious reward. Participation may vary.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio. And if you missed the show, you probably missed this little thing that I revealed for the first time since 2007.
I'll give you another example. I've got a crush on a Slurpee. I love Coca-Cola Slurpees. Love them. I'll get the biggest one there is. I don't care how filled my bladder. I'm telling you, I've had four of them in a day. And we're talking about the big 64 ounce. I am in love with a Coca-Cola Slurpee. When I used to live in Fort Lee, New Jersey, I used to walk 7 blocks in New Jersey to get to the 7-Eleven and go get me a Coca-Cola Slurpee. Now, for a little time, back in 2007, I had an official Coke problem.
Okay. Very funny.
Tune in weeknights from 7 to 10 right here on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the radio. You never know what I'm going to reveal.
This one time racism saved my life, man. I was on a plane. I was coming from overseas, and I don't know how this guy got a machine gun on the plane, but he stood up, man. He said, "Everybody, get on the plane, bro. Nobody look at my face." I started freaking out because he was Chinese. I was like, "Why is he talking like that?" He was screaming and crying. I was the only brother on the plane. Well, I thought I was the only brother. I looked over. There was one other black dude. He was from Nigeria. I looked over at him. He was looking right in my face, man. He didn't say two words to me. He just looked at me. He was like... He didn't even talk. I knew just what he was talking about. I looked right back at him. I was like... Some white dudes on the front of the plane seen us. They were like, "Oh, my God. I think those black guys are going to try to save us." We were just communicating that we understood the situation. We were both seeing the same thing. What we understood was simple. Terrorists don't take black hostages. That's the truth. I have yet to see one of us on the news reading the hostage letter. They is treating us good. We all chilling and shit. I'd like to give a shout out to Ray Ray and Big Steve and Central Newport. You're not going to see it. Terrorists are smart. They know what they're doing there, you know. They terrorists. They know it was black people's bad bargaining chips. They called the White House and said, "Hello? We have got 5 black... Hello?"
Hey guys, it's Reese on the radio. And are you nervous about calling Reese on the radio with 347-308-8701? That's fine. You can send us an email at reeseontheradio@yahoo.com. We'll take all of your emails and we'll read them on the air. Don't like the show? We'll read it. Like the show? We'll definitely read it. You're indifferent about the show? We'll read it. Whatever it is you've got to say, we'll read it. Just send an email to reeseontheradio@yahoo.com. That's right, reeseontheradio@yahoo.com. Get your comments live on the air. Get your views. Get your position made. Whatever it is that you've got to say, just email us at reeseontheradio@yahoo.com.
In Delaware, the largest growth in population is Indian American, moving from India. You cannot go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donut unless you have a slight Indian accent. The police, I'm not joking.
On the radio. 20 minutes to 10 o'clock. On blogtalkradio.com. April 16th, 2012. Tomorrow, tax day. Ask for an extension. That's right, officially, tomorrow's tax day. April 15th, of course, landed on a Sunday. Today's the 16th, so because it landed on a weekend, they extended it 2 days. So instead of the traditional, the 15th, it will be the 17th this year. So file your taxes or make a phone call to the IRS and ask for an extension. You'll need it.
Yeah, there was some kind of holiday up in Massachusetts at one of the tax centers.
Today was Patriots Day.
Yeah, Patriots Day, right, right. That's why we got the 17th instead of today, the 16th.
That's right. And up in Boston, of course, was the Boston Marathon. A Kenyan one. It's almost like it's Groundhog's Day. It's Groundhog's Day.
Set your watch
for Boston
that one.
Marathon and the New York City Marathon. When everybody said, "Oh, Kenyon wins," it's like, why don't we just reprint last year's marathon? Just like change the name. I mean, it's the same thing. Here's the interesting part about the Boston Marathon. In 2008, I was at the Boston Marathon. And I went to go interview some of the people, you know, stand on the sidelines and give out, you know, water, Gatorade, or whatever it was. And the guys got upset at me because I was asking questions. And one guy said, "Oh, he's just asking you questions to make you look stupid." I was like, "No, I just want to ask questions like, do you know about certain things about the Boston Marathon? You know, some people are just volunteering. I know they don't know everything." But it was sort of like a litmus test for people, like, how much do you know about the Kenyans? Because they, you know, traditionally win. Now, you would think Kenyans win every damn marathon in the country.
Yeah.
At least major ones. Do you know that track and field is not their number one sport? In Kenya?
No, what is it?
Cricket. Isn't that amazing? Like, how is that their number one sport?
Number one sport, number one source of protein.
Oh, my. All right, I'm moving on. Moving right along. Anyway, look, I need you to check out ReeseOnRadio.com. Top story today is about the wealth factor. There are many news outlets out there that are talking about Romney's wealth and the fact that he is a millionaire, that he cannot relate to the average American voter because he's just so rich. Now, it's reported that Romney is worth some $200 million. So I beg the question, couldn't you apply the same narrative to rich people in this country? And the three people I bring up are who I would consider the extreme opposite of a guy like Mitt Romney. Because if Mitt Romney is worth $200 million, Jay-Z is worth a reported $450 million.
But
wouldn't it be fair to say that Jay-Z doesn't relate to the average American, much less African American?
You're right. The second, probably not. But I'll tell you one thing: Jay-Z can tell you that Mitt Romney can.
What's that?
How much a gallon of milk is?
Well, it doesn't matter. The bottom line is Jay-Z doesn't. You think Jay-Z does his own shopping?
I'm sure he knows how much a gallon of milk is.
He knew how much a gallon of milk was before he got rich. I bet you he doesn't know today. I bet you he doesn't even care. The question is Mitt Romney, and when Mitt Romney started out, I'm sure he bought his own milk. The problem is that Jay-Z hasn't bought his own milk in years, in eons.
You don't know that.
Yeah, I'm positive. Jay-Z is not out at the supermarket. No way. I'm pretty sure he has somebody to do that. The man is worth close to $500 million. And he's worth more than Mitt Romney. So the bottom line is, can Jay-Z relate to the average person today? Of course he can. Well, if the argument is that Mitt Romney is wealthy, he can't relate to the average American. So the same question has to be asked about Jay-Z. He writes music talking about the hood. What about 50 Cent? He's talking about all day, I'm thugging and slugging. Thugging, slugging, and mugging. He can't relate to the average. He's worth over $300 million. What about Sean P. Diddy Combs? Sean P. Diddy Combs, he's a multimillionaire. He's worth a reported $200 million. I think he's worth $300 million. Can he not identify? That man was running around in 2004 with voter die T-shirts. He got himself into politics. Can this rich man be able to identify with the average voter?
No, Raven Simone is worth more than Romney.
Exactly.
Get that man's name to save my life.
Let's go even further than that. George Clooney is running around the globe trying to get help for starving people in Darfur and Somalia. George Clooney's a multimillionaire. How could he possibly know what starving people are going through?
Well, he starved himself at one point.
But isn't he out of touch?
Yeah, on the same token, but he's not running for president.
Oh, but wait. The man goes to the White House ever so often. In fact, he's getting ready. He just held a fundraiser for $40,000 a person. I mean, the question is whether or not rich people can identify with the average person. So if we're going to say that about Mitt Romney, we can say that about anybody who's rich.
Well, he's come a long way from facts of life, maintenance man.
But the bottom line is why would they suggest Mitt Romney is not in touch with the average human being because he's rich? What I'm also hearing is now that Obama is even going so far as to say that Romney is a racial profiler.
Yeah, that is good.
Legalization of drugs is going to be the answer. Mr. President, excuse the personal note, but I grew up in a generation that has lived with the unfulfilled promise of immigration reform, and I'm not that young. And you think if you are reelected, you'll be the president that gets it done and can be promised you'll do it within the first year of your second term?
I can promise that I will try to do it in the first year of my second term. I want to try this year. The challenge we've got on immigration reform is very simple. I've got a majority of Democrats who are prepared to vote for it, and I've got no Republicans who are prepared to vote for it. It's worse than that. We now have a Republican nominee who said that the Arizona laws are a model for the country, that and these are laws that potentially would allow someone to be stopped and picked up and asked where their citizenship papers are based on an assumption. Very troublesome. And this is something that the Republican nominee has said should be a model for the country.
Now, see, what I have a problem with this is very, very simple. Because here's Barack Obama, who's talking about how Mitt Romney agrees with the Arizona law, and he misrepresents the Arizona law when he says that police can stop you based on suspicion. And he's saying how wrong that is. Well, guess what there, moron? Why aren't you saying anything about the stop and frisk program in New York City and other urban cities? Because the police are stopping those individuals based on an assumption, aren't they? And the excuse by Ray Kelly, the commissioner of the NYPD, and Michael Bloomberg is that this stops violence in those crime-ridden communities. So they should be allowed to stop people based upon a suspicion, the way they look. Because the Arizona law in no way, is what's being represented by Barack Obama in that audio clip, if you could hear it. In no way is it represented that way. And I want to give you the quote. I'm going to read you the quote that he exactly says. He says, "We now have a Republican nominee who said that the Arizona laws are a model for the country. That potentially would allow someone to be stopped and picked up and asked where their citizenship papers are based on an assumption." And that's not the law. The law says that if you are in a car accident, let's say that you are in the middle of committing a crime, you and your friend get into a fight, a police action, and I ask you, hey, you got some ID? Not I pull you over because you're brown, or I pull you over because you look suspicious to me. That's not what the law says. You're in the midst of a police situation, car accident, a traffic stop. You get into a fight. You get into an altercation. I ask you for your identification in the middle of that police action, and your papers come up that you don't belong here. Then you get sent off. But the stop and frisk laws in New York City don't do any of that. They don't ask you for your paperwork in a police action. The police officer's driving through a crime-ridden neighborhood. You look suspicious to him. He jumps out of the car and says, hey, get up against the wall. I don't hear any Democrats screaming for that practice to stop in New York. Not one. Not one. Now, as a Negro in law enforcement, Derek the Bounty Hunter, I ask you, why is Barack Obama saying that the Arizona law is unlawful, but yet says nothing about the stop and frisk law, the stop and frisk going on in New York City?
You know, to be honest with you, man, I never heard any news media talk about the stop and frisk law in New York City. the hot button issue is that one in Arizona. And let's face it, the reason why everybody's talking about it is the Hispanic vote. Okay?
Yes. Clearly.
The Republicans are getting their butts whipped up. Huh?
Yes, but the bottom line is that why is it more important for illegals to get preferential treatment than the people who are in Arizona? I think there's one town in Arizona just south of Phoenix. There's a town in Arizona. It's number one for kidnapping due to people crossing the border in Arizona at beheadings, kidnapping, drug violence. These people shouldn't be protected. The American citizens shouldn't be protected. So we don't want to have police stopping people who are illegals or finding if people are illegals and sending them back. So they're misrepresenting what the law, Arizona law is. I mean, when is this government going to start protecting its citizens and not foreigners trying to get in illegally?
But see, like I said, man, you know, in the end, I mean, don't get me wrong, that law in New York is bad too. But, you know, in the end, you know, you end up confusing a lot of people who are citizens with people who are illegal. You know?
Not necessarily. Derek, if I pull you over because you made an illegal left turn, or you and another guy get into a car accident, and I pull you over, what would be the regular police action when the police officer shows up? Let me see your license and registration. You hand over a fake ID and a fake registration, you don't belong here, we deport you. That's the bottom line. That's what the law says. If you read the law, it's only 16 pages, Derek. You can read it online. In no way does it
only
say
16 pages.
It's only 16 pages long.
You say that like
I have nothing else to do, you know.
No. Derek, first of all, listen, Derek, the law is 16 pages long. The Obama health care plan is 2,900 pages long.
Yeah, but there's a lot of different complications in there.
Yes, I know. Yes, exactly. But the
let's keep it real here.
But the law is so simple to write. Even here's the scary part. Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States, was asked at a congressional hearing. He was asked outright whether or not he thought the law in Arizona was constitutional. He says on its face, it doesn't look or appear to be constitutional. And they asked him, where in the law do you think it's unconstitutional? He then responded, well, I haven't read it yet. What?
I don't know. I have to read it, brother. I ain't gonna lie to you.
It's only 16 pages, Derek. It's less than a dissertation, my man.
I have to read it.
Who reads those? You gotta
Come
have a
on,
breakdown
man.
Of it.
You can read all right,
well, you know, let's face it. You know, I mean, wow. You know, sit there and look at that Arizona governor. You know, she's threatened by Obama. You know, so yeah.
Yes, because he's what?
He's just like this most powerful, you know, masculine looking black guy. You know, I mean, I confront Urkel scares the crap out of me too. You know.
Don't try to make it a black white issue. That's the narrative that people are saying. She was intimidated by him because he is the most powerful man in the world. Why wouldn't she be intimidated? She's just a governor. This is the leader. This is the leader of the free world.
She's disrespectful, man.
She wonder why he don't want him a white wife.
What are you talking about?
Why he don't want him a white wife? Like the basketball players.
Derek, there were senators on the House floor saying Bush lied. People died. People called him a traitor on the House floor, man. There were people running around the street saying the only weapons of mass destruction? No. Something about drugs. Oh, the only dope that you should shoot is Bush. Lionsgate put out a film called The Killing of a President, a mockumentary of assassinating George W. Bush. You want to talk about disrespect, my man? That was all over the white man was in there. Come on, man. Lionsgate's films?
No, dude, look, man, it was not real. It was a movie, okay?
It doesn't matter, dude. If anybody has done a movie about the assassination of Barack Obama, you're going to tell me that the libs wouldn't have gone ape?
Dude, it's not real. It's a movie. It's not
real. Wait. Could you mock? Hold on.
What she did was real. What your guy screaming, you lie, did was real. Okay, don't tell me something.
And he was lying. But he was lying.
Come on, man. nothing to do with doing that. Like I said, those people are totally disrespecting the office of the president.
Like it hasn't been disrespected before.
Hold up, man. Yeah, I know when they disrespect, they usually the Republicans disrespecting the Democrats.
No. You're going to tell me that the Democrats didn't disrespect the president of the United States, calling him a traitor? Called him a traitor, dude.
When?
What? On the House floor after the Iraq War. In 2000, in the 2004 campaign, they called him a traitor.
When was this? Hold on.
In 2004, look it up. Some of the most offensive and vile things said about George W. Bush. My man, they said the only dope that you should shoot is Bush. There were guys holding
up guys. First of all, from a former marijuana smoker, you can't shoot up Bush. You gotta smoke it.
Nothing else. What I'm saying is that it's a double standard. When it's Barack Obama, it's racism. When it's George W. Bush, it's justified.
And
that idly by when it happened, and you laughed about it. And you know you did.
I don't remember that. I don't recall that.
Of course you don't remember it, because you have what's called revisionist history, and you have what I'd like to call selective amnesia.
Nah, that's not a smoking Bush.
It's absolutely...
I've grown beyond that now.
Yes, thank you for being a legitimate member of society. Hey, listen, did you hear? It turns out that I'm going to be right, that the George Zimmerman case is going to be thrown out on its face, because the probable cause affidavit is weak.
We'll see. If it is, there's going to be a damn riot down here.
I know. And we'll call you... We will call you for the coverage. We hope you're going to be in the middle of it. We want you to be in the middle of it so we can interview some of the people out there rioting.
Oh, Lord. Come on now, man.
You got a camera phone with video?
I'm staying far away from that now.
Oh, come on. Well, at least you can be corresponding away from the violence like you're in Baghdad when the bombs.
You got to be up on the roof, yeah?
Yes. And you can describe the carnage to us.
Oh, God.
Down on the rooftop with an iPhone. Shoot video.
Yeah, you got to shoot video of this, Derek.
You want some of the best video? Hang outside of the big screen TV shops.
That thing is going to be a nightmare. I'm serious. I don't know if I want to be a part of
it. Oh, I know this, man. You may have to, what you might have to do is cover up. You might have to, what did you say? You may have to put the cardboard against your windows, you know, like they do during a hurricane.
Yeah, oh, big time.
I think it's only right.
Wow, what a nice head of history.
Oh, man, we didn't even talk about Tupac, but we'll talk about it tomorrow. Tupac showed up at, Coachella?
Yeah.
As a hologram. You got to see the video. I can't play the audio because it's too curse laden. But let's get out of here. We'll be back tomorrow. Same bad time. 8 o'clock right here on Blog Talk Radio. Peace on the radio. We love you. See you tomorrow.